We're inside the tree, Jorgen said. Entrance is where the branches meet the trunk.
I still couldn't tell several of the humans apart, especially when they all started to chatter together.
Say again, Jerkface? Did you say you're inside the tree? What's the matter, Sentry? Never flown a ship inside a tree before?
Shut it, T-Stall.
We're on our way, Jerkface,
FM said.
But you have incoming. We need to do this now. Quirk?
I can do it, she said. I only want to have to use one shot, but I can do it.
Netter,
Jorgen said.
Catch that ship before it leaves the tree. Jerkface,
Arturo said.
If we chase it outside, we'd have more space to catch it in an uncontrolled descent before it hit the ground.
Are you talking about chasing that ship full of my people down toward the core? I asked.
Maybe, Arturo said. In here is better,
Jorgen said.
We have incoming. Netter, get it done. Copy,
Netter said. And he dove toward the ship as it headed into the mouth of the shaft that would lead out of the tree. When he got close, he hit his IMP, dropping the ship's shields. Arturo dove directly behind him, and I jerked my ship to the side in my attempt to keep up. I wished I had my own ship. I looked like an idiot in this thing, which wasn't going to help them think of me as a capable member of the team.
Scud,
Jorgen said.
Enemy ships, on top and closing. Netter, help me hold them off.
I focused on following Arturo as we neared the transport ship. Kimmelin's ship shot over our heads. She had to get ahead of the transport ship to get a clear shot. The transport ship aimed its destructors at her and fired, but she dodged and turned her ship around to face it.
Ready,
she said.
All right, Quirk,
Arturo said.
On my mark.
He soared over the transport ship and shot it with his light lance. I aimed and fired as well, grabbing the ship by the other side.
Scud,
Netter said.
They're coming in hot. Fire,
Arturo said. Kimmelin's destructors fired, and the cockpit of the transport ship exploded in a shower of sparks. Chapter 9.
Quirk,
Jorgen shouted over the radio.
Report?
Successful, I think, Kimmelin said. Cockpit annihilated. Hull is intact.
That was a seriously impressive shot. Kimmelin would have been a star, even in the professional leagues.
Alenik, how's the inhibitor?
I scanned the area through the negative realm. The hull was a giant blank space. Operational, I said. I held one half of the ship by my light lance, and Arturo had the other. The ship's acclivity ring also seemed to be operational, so we didn't have to adjust our boosters to keep it in the air. Without the cockpit controls, I didn't know how much longer that would last. What about the pilot? I asked.
Dead? Kimmelin said. Co-pilot, too, if there was one.
I blinked down at the ship. I didn't have a clear view of the cockpit from this angle, but...
Well done, Quirk,
Jorgen said, like it was nothing. She just killed people, and they thought of it as nothing. I shook myself. What did I think was going to happen in an actual military firefight?
We're here to help,
FM said, and I looked up through my canopy to see the rest of the flight descending on the remaining ships. They seemed to have it handled for now, and the light lamps would be sufficient to hyperjump us all. We need to jump this ship to the base, I said, where the pilots can board independence ships and help us.
You can take them anytime, Alenik,
Jorgen said. I didn't need his permission, but at least we agreed on what had to be done.
That base will be crawling with the enemy, won't it?
Arturo asked. Probably, I said. Drop your line if you don't want to come with me. I gave Arturo a few seconds to decide. With the ship's acclivity ring still functional, I didn't need him to hold the ship, but I could use the backup when we arrived. When he didn't release, I reached through the negative realm up to the airspace in front of the Independence base and pulled us all through. The eyes were wrathful as we passed beneath them, but no more than last time. Hopefully, it had been long enough since my last jump that I wasn't putting us all at too much risk, especially because I wasn't confident that I was going to get out of this battle without needing to hyperjump again.
Alanique, Arturo said over the radio. Confirm, personnel in that hangar are the enemy, correct?
I had to turn my ship to the side to see what he was referring to. There were Unity soldiers inside the hangar, some staring in confusion, others running for cover. Affirmative, I said.
Copy, Arturo said.
He opened fire as we approached the hangar, and the remaining Unity people began to flee.
Do we need to secure the area? Arturo asked.
My people can do it, I said. At least, I hoped they would do a better job of it than they did the first time. We flew into the hangar and deposited the ship on the ground, our ship still hovering above it. My people poured out, including my brother, Gilof, who turned around and stared up at us. There weren't more than 50 of them. I wondered if some of the Independence people had defected to Unity. I pulled off my helmet and waved at Gilof. He waved back and joined a group of Independence pilots already heading to the remaining ships. They'd get in the air and join the fight, putting us ahead in numbers. For now. I searched again for hypercom signals. Far out in the miasma, I heard the buzz of a communication.
At Hollow. Bring her in alive. Other cytonic interference. Not sure what to expect.
I smiled. Quillan could sense Jorgen and the slugs, same as I could. A group of humans with hyperdrives would be low on his list of possible explanations.
More enemy incoming, I said over the radio. Do we know how many ships?
Arturo asked. No idea, I said. Depends on how many Quillan can muster in a hurry. And how much of a threat he thought I was. Ships couldn't move as fast through the miasma as they could in the vacuum because of the air resistance. Quillan would probably head straight up out of the atmosphere and then skirt the planet in the vacuum. He'd call up units as close to us as possible, which meant they could be here long before he was. I widened my sensors, searching for the incoming ships. They were coming through the miasma on the duskward side of Hollow. They'd pass by Skyward Flight before they got to us. They're coming up fast. Duskward side.
What's that?
Jorgen asked. Oh, the side where the sun sets, on the... The enemy split into two groups as the ships approached the tree.
We use time on a clock, he said. Like, directly behind me is 6 o'clock. Straight ahead is 12.
I had vaguely heard of this, an old-fashioned way of telling directions, probably from the days when we were allied with the humans. We don't use that notation anymore. Here. I sent the direction to his mind so he could see what I meant.
Scud,
Jorgen said.
I see them on our sensors now. They are coming up fast. Looks like about 20 of them.
The pilots we rescued are getting in their ships now, I said, so we'll have backup. The remaining Unity soldiers seemed unwilling to step into the hangar to be shot by our destructors, which had given the Independence pilots plenty of time to get in their ships. Arturo and I could now go back and help the flight without risking that my people would be overrun. We're on our way back to you, I said to Jorgen. Maybe we can make a stand inside the tree and keep the enemy ships occupied.
Affirmative,
Jorgen said.
But if things get too hot or they try to skirt us, we'll implement bounce protocol.
I didn't know what that was, but I had to trust they would handle themselves. I found the Independence radio channel and broadcast to the ships.
Independence pilots, allies are fighting Unity forces near the lumber mine operations. Hold the base, and we'll be back to support you as soon as we can.
Alanique,
my brother said over the radio.
Who are your allies?
I wasn't going to announce that over the radio. I'll explain later. I flipped to Skyward Flight's channel and followed Arturo as he turned his ship toward the entrance at the base of the branches. Quillan's reinforcements beat us there. I could see half their flight entering the shaft that led to the lumber mine, while the others flew into the larger upper opening ahead of us. They'd split up to come at Jorgen and the others from both sides. Arturo opened fire as we chased them in, and some of the ships flipped around, returning fire.
"You've got company down below," Arturo said over the radio. "We're keeping them busy up top."
"Copy, Amphi," Jorgen said. "Flight, star formation, crossfire positions. FM, Sentry, cover R6.
Jorgen had said 6 was behind him, hadn't he? I was glad, if he was using that terminology, it wasn't addressed to me. I dodged fire from an incoming ship as Arturo and I sped past, leaving them to follow us down into the depths of the tree. We approached Skyward's formation from above, firing at the ships that had them pinned down near the bottom of the tree. The ship I targeted lost its shield, and I pegged it with a destructor blast right in its boosters. The pilot ejected, joining several other pilots drifting down into the mining facilities, while their ships crashed into the wooden wall on the Dawnward side. Skyward flight flew in a loose sphere with Jorgen and Kimmelin at the center, all with their acclivity rings rotated to point their noses upward at different angles. They filled the air with destructor blasts, each line of fire crossing over another. This formation was similar to one I'd learned in training, though we used laser guns instead of destructors. If you had an obstacle at your back and enough ships clustered together, any enemy that tried to get through to you risked getting tagged in your crossing lines of fire. Arturo took up position next to Netter, and I dodged past the ships between us, flying through to join Kimmelin and Jorgen at the center. "What are you doing?" I asked Jorgen over the radio. "You're the leader. Shouldn't you be out front?"
"What?" Jorgen said. "No. If I'm out front, I can't watch and give orders. And if I'm in trouble, who's going to make sure the rest of the flight is safe?"
"Safe? But you're not getting any of the action," I said. "How are you going to prove yourself?"
"Prove myself," Jorgen said.
"Quirk, incoming,"
FM said. Kimmelin pivoted her ship to point down, opening fire. It took me a second longer to get my ship turned the right way, and then I joined them. Kimmelin, especially, was a good shot. She got several blows to the enemy shields before they peeled off to the sides and swung around again. Two more ships broke past FM and Sentry below us. These got close enough that they deployed their light hooks, 2 from each ship, the streams crossing each other to form a kind of net. They pulled apart, trying to fly alongside Kimmelin to capture her ship, but she rolled to the side, avoiding the trap.
"Scud, what is that?"
"Light nets," I said. "It's a capture tactic. Their orders are to bring us in alive." Or me, anyway, now that Quillan knew I was here. Though if these pilots got close enough to recognize the humans under their flight helmets, their commander would quickly realize having humans to turn over to the superiority could only work in Unity's favor. Not that I was going to let that happen. The ships turned their nets toward Jorgen, and I fired at one with my destructors. The pilot tried to maintain the net a moment too long, and I landed enough hits to take down the shield. The ship turned, breaking the net, but Kimmelin got the final shot, and the ship went into an uncontrolled spin. The pilot ejected, and instead of flying off to the side like the others, the ship spiraled into one of the mining buildings below. At least there wouldn't be many people living in here, though there would be some civilians present. I hoped they'd taken cover when the fighting began.
"Jerkface," FM said. "We have incoming."
She was right. My sensors identified a whole fleet of Air Force ships, many more than we'd been chasing around this tree, and all of them would be equipped with light nets. They were still a few minutes out, but they were coming for us.
"We can't fight all those,"
Jorgen said.
"How defensible is the base? Does it have ground support?"
"Light guns?" I asked. "No. It's never been attacked, not in almost a century. Maybe not even then."
"Scud,"
Jorgen said.
"We need to get out of here. Skyward flight, bounce protocol. Fall back to the base. We're not leaving without Alanik's people."
Leaving? We were supposed to take and hold the base. If we left now, how would we inspire the rest of the Independence Air Force to fight? I could see the incoming ships on my sensor screen, though. There were too many of them. We wouldn't be able to hold the base against so many, even if they didn't have a cytonic with them. FM and Sentry immediately disappeared, though I saw them reappear outside the tree through one of the knotholes. They'd used their hyperdrives to escape. The Unity pilots clearly weren't expecting this, and I could hear snatches of confused exclamations over the radio through the negative realm.
Alanik, Jorgen said. We don't want to leave you behind.
As if they could. I've got it, I said.
Right. Quirk. 10 o'clock. Here we go.
Copy, Jerkface, Kimmelin said.
And then both their ships disappeared. Chapter 10. I still wasn't sure which way 10 o'clock was, but I guessed which tree gap Jorgen was referring to and reached through the negative realm, pulling myself out on the far side. This was my third hyper jump in a shorter space of time than I would have liked, and the eyes seemed more fixated on me than normal. But I emerged from the negative realm 0.5 kilometer from Jorgen and Kimmelin, who were much closer together. How do you do that? I asked Jorgen.
I send the slugs an image of a location, and then we ask nicely.
You ask nicely.
It's not the only way, Jorgen said, but it's ours.
I couldn't argue with their results. We had a moment to reposition while the enemy shot out of the holes in Hollow. I tried to track the battle on my sensor screen. Independence ships were in the air now, defending the base. I wasn't sure how many Unity personnel were still inside, but we could deal with them in a minute. Hopefully, once we'd won this skirmish, they'd surrender. Skyward flight scattered, leading the enemy ships in circles around the tree and heading toward the Independence base. Jorgen and Kimmelin hung back as Jorgen gave instructions to the others. I still didn't understand it. If a leader did that in the junior leagues or in Air Force training, they would be immediately replaced. You didn't raise your shooting averages or your evasion scores by hanging back, and if your stats weren't impressive enough, you couldn't advance. Watching Jorgen work made me wonder if I'd made too much of human aggression based on a few verbal arguments and the willingness to shoot out a single cockpit. 4 Unity ships charged up the branches toward us, and I pivoted my ship, showering one of them with destructor fire. The ship dodged around one of the branches, flying close to the structures hanging beneath, using them as cover. There was a cowardly move. I wasn't going to fire at the ship while it passed over civilians, but I also wasn't going to let it get away. I kept pace right over it, readying more fire. The ship twisted around the branch, winding up in a spiral pattern, and I followed. I waited for a clear patch of branch with no civilian targets and then opened fire. The ship tried to dodge, but Kimmelin flew in from the side, her destructors blocking off the path of escape. The ship's shield went down, and Kimmelin's fire hit one of the boosters, sending it spinning away from the branch. The Unity pilot ejected, but missed the tree, floating down below Hollow's jagged acclivity stone.
Alanik,
Quillan said in my head.
I don't know where you found another cytonic, but you're only making this worse on yourself by resisting.
I almost retorted that he was only making this worse on himself by fighting us. But I held myself back. He wasn't worth it.
Amphi, Netter, Sentry needs support, Jorgen said.
I followed Kimmelin back to Jorgen. Down by the base of the tree, I could see Sentry's ship being cornered by 3 ships that had joined their light hooks into a net. They closed in, one of them speeding ahead and cutting her off, catching her ship in their light net and hauling her along behind them. FM was hot on their tails, destructors blazing.
Sentry,
Jerkface said.
Want me to pull you out?
Affirmative,
Sentry said.
Cheeky's ready.
Sentry disappeared out of the net. The ships wavered for a second, probably wondering what had happened, and then reversed, trying to catch FM in their nets. Amphi and Netter shot 2 of them down while FM danced away.
Alanik?
Jorgen said.
Who is this voice in my head that isn't you?
Quillan, I said. He's on his way.
He wants to know who I am, but I'm not answering him.
That's for the best, I said. Trust me. We'd shaken most of the first wave of ships, but the second wave bore down on us. They'd be here in moments.
Jerkface, Arturo said. We can't take all those ships. Do we have a plan? Unless we have some way to defend the base,
Jorgen said.
We're going to have to evacuate.
I'd hoped to have more time to reach the other Independence bases, to call more fighters to join us. If half the fighters here had abandoned us, we had even less support than I'd hoped. If Detritus had sent more of their military, maybe... I'd told Cobb I would make use of what he was willing to send, and I intended to do it. We'd rescued my people. That was still an improvement. If the humans were willing to work with me, we could press forward together from there. Let's do it, I said.
Where will we go? Arturo asked. Can we hyperjump home to Detritus? Already,
Netter said.
We were just starting to have fun. No, we can't,
Jorgen said.
I got a message from Cobb on the hypercom. He said the assembly has arranged a meeting with the superiority. He's had to order our arrest upon our return to convince my mother to keep him in the loop. He's worried about the concessions they're making. If we bring Alanik's people to Detritus now, he's afraid they'll end up as bargaining chips.
That's not happening, I said.
Scud, those ships are coming in fast, Jerkface,
FM said.
We can't pull everyone out with one hyperjump. We'd make too big a target of ourselves trying to connect everyone together. FM is right,
Jorgen said.
We'll have to use the hyperdrives. And that means it needs to be somewhere the slugs know, or somewhere I can see, at least for the first jump.
The platform, I said. Wandering Leaf. You can use your hyperdrives to get beneath the auto turrets. The Unity Cytonics can't teleport. They can't come after us there. At least, not unless Quillan could convince his superiority friends to send hyper-jumping Cytonics to extract us. He wouldn't want to do that if he could help it. He was trying to prove how useful and cooperative he could be. He'd lose his leverage if he made the superiority do all the work.
That might be our best option,
Jorgen said.
We'll bring as many of the Urdale with us as we can. Alanik, can you communicate with them?
On it, I said. Quillan's reinforcements were arriving now, destructor fire raining through the branches above. Skyward Flight met them in front of the Independence base, Jorgen giving orders for his flight to defend the airspace out front. I switched over to the Independence channel. Independence fighters, I said. There's a fleet incoming, and the force is overwhelming. We need to flee. Who is your commander?
Alanik, my brother said. Our captain was injured in the blast. I can speak for the group. Where would we go?
I was sorry any of them had been injured, but I was glad Gilof wasn't among them. We're going to abandon the base, I said, and retreat to Wandering Leaf. A long silence followed.
To Wandering Leaf,
another pilot said.
The platform that shoots at us.
Exactly, I said. Stay together in the airspace in front of the base. Have someone land and tell those without ships to gather inside the damaged superiority vessel. That might be the only way to retrieve Rinnakeen's family and our other non-combatant allies, in addition to any wounded. We're coming to get you. Our allies have some unconventional methods, but we're not going to leave you behind.
Will do,
Gilof said, though he sounded dubious. Hold on, I said. We're going to get you out of here.
We've got your back, Gilof said.
And we've got yours. I switched back to the channel with the humans. The civilians are gathering inside the broken ship. We should be able to use a light lance to bring that with us, correct?
Yes,
Jorgen said.
Quirk and I are headed toward Wandering Leaf. I'll send Quirk in first, and then the rest of our ships can jump to hers. It might take us a couple of trips to get everyone.
I hoped their hyperdrive somehow helped them evade the eyes. They must, since the superiority felt safe using them as often as they did. If you get a chance, I'd appreciate a ride from one of your hyperdrives, I said. I didn't want to risk taking another jump so soon. Not if I didn't have to.
Okay, sure,
Jorgen said. He sounded confused, but he didn't question me.
Help us defend the base, and then we'll pull you out when we're done.
I followed him and Kimmelin on the sensor screen as they approached the platform. They flew through the miasma at close to Mach 9, a speed that must have threatened to rattle their ships apart. These humans meant business. Careful not to get too close, I told them.
We've got experience with these things, Jorgen said. We'll keep our distance.
I leaned on my throttle, catching up to the humans in front of the base. Enemy ships tore through the airspace, trying to run the humans off, but they fought in tandem, harassing the enemy ships enough to keep them from landing and arresting my people. I swept down toward the entrance to the hangar, taking up a defensive position near the broken superiority ship. Even from this distance, I could see people pressed up against the glass at the back of the hold, looking up at us, probably wondering what was about to happen. At least they'd listened to me. I wouldn't have been able to get them out otherwise.
All right. I have visual on the surface of the platform, Jorgen said. Quirk, you ready?
Ready,
Kimmelin said. I watched on my proximity sensors as Kimmelin's ship disappeared from the sky.
Quirk, status?
Jorgen said. I'm fine, Kimmelin said. Near the surface of the platform, underneath the autofire. Looking for a hangar entrance now.
We can't wait, Jorgen said. Skyward flight, you are a go to bounce.
Copy, Jerkface, Arturo said. We're on it.
In the airspace directly above, I felt Quillan descending from his re-entry into the atmosphere.
Alanik, he said. Stop this before someone gets hurt.
Too late, I said back. I fired on an enemy ship, shaking it off FM's tail, and FM pegged one of the Independence ships with her light lance. Then they both disappeared. All over the battlefield, the humans disappeared with Independence ships in tow. A moment later, FM's ship appeared again, so close to Jorgen's that they nearly collided.
Sorry, FM said over the radio. We really need to work on their sense of space when we're in the air.
Several of the other human ships also reappeared, and I left my post by the base entrance to provide some covering fire while Jorgen did his best to dodge his own reappearing flightmates. Why are they doing that? I asked Jorgen over the radio.
We're using Quirk Slug as an anchor on one side and mine on the other,
Jorgen said.
It's a new tactic. We're still working out the kinks.
I couldn't argue with their results. The humans made another lap, taking more of the Independence fighters up to the platform.
Amphi,
Jorgen said as Arturo reappeared.
Get the superiority ship. On it,
Arturo said as I flew in front of the hangar, drawing the fire of the nearby ships and then twist-rolling over the top of the base to evade them. I didn't see Arturo jump out with the damaged superiority ship, but when I returned, the hangar was empty. A ship closed on me, destructors blazing.
Stand down, Alanik,
Quillan said in my mind.
Your force is dwindling, and you have nowhere to run.
That wasn't precisely true, but I gathered Quillan hadn't figured that out yet. I led him away from the base and from Jorgen. I didn't want any of the human ships getting caught in the crossfire if he decided to. A current ripped through the negative realm by my left wing, and I sent my ship into a roll. If Quillan was willing to throw mind blades, he must have gotten better at them recently. Last time I trained with him, he'd have cut himself out of the sky trying something like that. How many ships are left? I asked Jorgen.
Not many,
Jorgen said.
One more trip should do it. How's everything on your side, Quirk?
Found a hangar, Kimmelin said. Looks like the inside has working atmospheric generators.
That was good. I'd assumed there wouldn't be much of use on the platform, because if it were still useful, the superiority would have dismantled it long ago. Sometimes scavengers and thrill seekers risked the trip beyond the auto turrets, but that was about it.
Alanik,
Quillan said.
You can't hide from us. Surrender immediately.
Or, I asked,
Didn't the superiority want me alive?
Yes,
Quillan said.
But if you insist on resisting, arrangements will have to be made.
And with that, Quillan and two other ships behind him opened fire. I threw my ship into a defensive sequence, but it wasn't as deft or as immediate as it would have been in my own ship, where the controls were second nature. I tipped my nose in the direction of Wandering Leaf and hit Overburn, shooting out in front of Quillan and the others. My ship shook like it might fall apart, and my grav caps absorbed the G-forces, but a moment later I could see Wandering Leaf through the swirling red mist. The auto turret platform was as big as one of the larger branches of industry. Quillan was catching up to me rapidly, and I kept my mind open to the negative realm around me so I could dodge as he sent two more bursts of mind blades after my wings. I couldn't catch a ride with one of the humans and their hyperdrives while Quillan was on my tail, not without putting them in danger. I was going to have to risk one more hyperjump and hope I came out the other side.
Alanik, Jorgen said. Can you get out of there?
Working on it, I said. I'd need to hyperjump under the automatic weapons, but to arrive in a position that exact, below the auto-fire zone but above the platform so I didn't crash, I'd need to be able to see where I was going.
I think that's the last of them, Jerkface,
Arturo said.
Got it. We're pulling out. Alanik, do you need assistance?
Quillan could tear the human ships to bits with those mind blades. The only one who could see them coming was Jorgen, and I didn't have time to explain what to watch for. I've got it, I said, reaching through the negative realm to the space above the platform. There was a ripple behind me, and I dodged too late. A concussion bolt hit my mind, throwing off my focus and wiping out my vision so all I could see were stars. I nearly lost consciousness. Fire hit my shield in rapid bursts, depleting it. I didn't have time to reorient myself. I reached into the negative realm and pulled myself and my ship through to the platform on the other side. I could barely see the eyes, though I could feel their hatred. They were reaching for me, searching for me, ready to tear me apart if they found me. I emerged, my vision returning. But in my confusion, I targeted a space too high in the air above the platform. One of the enormous guns pivoted in my direction and opened fire. I dropped immediately toward the platform. Too late. Gunfire hit my booster, and my ship shuddered and shook. The gun fired again. I targeted a spot closer to the surface of the platform and yanked myself into the negative realm. Thousands of eyes watched my ship as it coughed and skipped. And then I was back, skimming toward the surface of the platform. I tried to pull up, but I was losing altitude fast.
Alanik,
Jorgen said over the radio. My sensors showed skyward flight and the Independence fighters farther behind me. My ship sputtered, the miasma parting as my nose dove toward the hard surface of the platform. Chapter 11.
Eject!
Jorgen shouted at me over the radio. I scrambled for the eject lever on the side of my seat, and my seat destabilized, still attached to the ship. Scud, that wasn't the eject lever. Where is it? I shouted at him through the negative realm, and an image formed in my mind, perfectly clear, of a lever directly under my knees. My ship shuddered toward the surface of the platform, and I hauled up on the lever, my canopy exploding outward and rockets beneath my ship propelling my seat into the air. I prepared to hyperjump again if the ejection shot me up into the path of the auto turrets, but I flew through the air below them, and then my parachute opened, yanking me back and dragging me along the surface of the platform. I rolled to a stop at the base of one of the auto turrets. I unstrapped from the chute and ran along the metal platform in the direction of my wreckage, the miasma clinging to my flight suit. The auto turrets fired above me, warding off Quillan and his people. They were peppering the platform with destructor fire, though their shots went wild because they couldn't shoot accurately from beyond the range of the auto fire.
I ducked under the metal roof that stretched around the auto turrets, working my way toward the hangar entrance Kimmelin had found. Skyward Flight and the Independence fighters had all parked their ships on the empty hangar floor. Both humans and Erdale had already climbed out of their ships and removed their helmets, staring at each other. Jorgen popped his canopy open, looking around at the other ships, counting them, making sure his people were all right, seeing how many of the Independence ships we'd rescued. There were about 24 of them, plus the broken Superiority ship. I recognized Rinnakian's daughter among several other people peering out of it. I pulled off my helmet. Kimmelin was right. The platform was still generating atmosphere. I wondered if scavengers had maintained the generators to make their jobs easier. Getting past the auto fire was difficult and dangerous, but not impossible if you had enough drones to distract the auto turrets. Those who had been here would have had to be well-funded, in addition to crazy. We could only claim the second.
"We made it,"
Jorgen said.
"Alanik, your ship."
"It's gone," I said. There might be something we could salvage, but it wasn't going to fly again.
"I'm glad you're okay,"
Jorgen said. He didn't say a word about the destruction of their property. My brother climbed out of one of the Independence ships, approaching me slowly, eyeing the humans like he was afraid of them. When he reached me, he embraced me.
"Alanik," he said, "I worried they'd captured you."
Leave it to Gilof to worry about me when he was the one who'd been captured.
"I'm glad you're okay, but..."
He looked around the hangar.
"Humans?"
I hadn't told anyone in my family what had happened on my mission to Starsight, only that things hadn't gone as planned. "They are willing to ally with us against the Superiority." I saw several of the other Independence pilots looking at each other, trying to make sense of this news. Inine, Rinnakine's daughter, stepped forward. She wore a fitted maternity jacket over her round stomach. I remembered now. She was expecting a baby in a few sun cycles. When she'd first announced it, Rinnakine had said he wished he could retire from his position to help care for the baby, but of course the political situation made that impossible. "My father was worried the Superiority would come after you," she said. "Do you know if he's..." I wasn't going to spread jam over this news. "They took him," I said. "We need to find him before he's turned over to the Superiority. Quillan is trying to gather us together to use as leverage. Rinnakine and me, and the rest of you, for better trade terms, more advancement." I didn't know exactly what they were asking for, but...
"Progress for Redon,"
my brother said with disgust, and I heard murmurs of agreement throughout the group of pilots. Inine looked to Jorgen. She didn't have a pin to translate, but Jorgen did. "You're here to help rescue my father? To help us turn the wind to our favor?"
Jorgen said, "we're here to make an alliance."
He looked at me.
"We're stronger together, in theory, but we're in a bit of a spot here. This isn't exactly a strong position from which to mount a counteroffense."
"That's true," I said. "But we saved my people, and for that I'm grateful." Gilof smiled at me, but he looked worried. All of them did. With good reason. FM looked up through the skylight of the hangar, scanning for ships.
"Can they get to us here?"
she asked. I searched for Quillan in the negative realm and felt his mind hovering out in the miasma. "I don't think so," I said. "They don't have any cytonics who can hyperjump. They could try to bring drones to distract the turrets, but they wouldn't be able to get many ships in that way, maybe one or two, so we'd have the overwhelming force. By a large amount, with the Independence fighters here. Quillan would have to fall back and regroup. Given his current position, he knew it. If the Superiority was really bent on collecting me, they'd show up eventually. But even Quillan didn't have Superiority cytonics at his beck and call, and especially not if he expected to prove himself to them. So we'd bought ourselves some time, at least.
"Can you hear their communications?"
Jorgen asked.
Are they making a plan?
I didn't hear any hypercom transmissions in the area, but Quillan would know I'd be listening for that. He might have switched to radio. Can you try to find their channel? I asked him.
Sure,
Jorgen said. He reached for his radio, disconnecting the headset so we could all hear. He flipped through silence and static, and then a voice projected from his dash.
People of Redon, with bipartisan support, we are greatly pleased to announce...
Gilof swore, and I almost echoed him. The voice belonged to Nana Lise. Leave it there, I said, and Jorgen pulled his fingers away from the dial. Nana Lise addressed the audience imperiously.
Our collaboration to elevate the Urdale onto the galactic stage. Who is that?
Arturo asked, drawing closer. Council President, I said. Elected leader of Redon. Currently, anyway. Inine folded her arms and leaned back against the superiority ship. Her father had been opposing Nana Lise at council for years.
Thank you,
a familiar voice said, and Inine's eyes widened.
This is Rinnakeen, High Chancellor of Independence.
It was Rinnakeen. I recognized his voice.
We may have our differences, but one thing both unity and independence agree on is that we want the best for Redon and for her people. Is that the person we were here to save?
Jorgen asked. I nodded, though all around the room, I could feel the independence pilots tensing. Our side wasn't supposed to talk like that, particularly not while Unity was in the middle of a military coup.
It is time to set aside our differences,
Rinnakeen continued,
in the name of progress for Redon. I would like to announce a bipartisan cooperation with a superiority.
That was rotten wood. Rinnakeen was using nearly the exact words Nana Lise had used in her announcement during the game. Jorgen looked at me. They're making him say this, I said. They have to be. Inine's face hardened, and she nodded.
I will be working with Nana Lise and the council over the coming days,
Rinnakeen said,
to ensure the future of both unity and independence. And, first and foremost, progress. Progress,
Gilof said.
That's what they say, but they're selling us out. All the other outposts gave in, all of them but us. There is one matter that concerns me as we move forward with the coalition,
Rinnakeen said.
Alanik, if you are out there, turn yourself in. It's not too late to be part of the solution. Thank you.
The broadcast ended, and Jorgen switched off the radio. Chapter 12. I stared straight ahead, trying to make sense of it. One of the humans I hadn't met yet scratched his head.
I'm not the smartest guy around, he said. But that sounded a lot like a vote in support of the superiority.
I recognized his voice from the radio. This was Netter, who flew with Arturo. They got to him somehow, I said. They must have threatened him. Bribery would never work on Rinnakeen. He was too principled for that. But everyone had something they were afraid of. Everyone had something they weren't willing to sacrifice. I didn't know what that thing would be for me, and I hoped I never had to find out. My father would never capitulate to the superiority, Inine said. That's true, I said, mostly for the benefit of the humans, because it was true. Rinnakeen believed in debate, in discussion, in continuing to advocate and work with unity. He believed in persuading people to see reason, but he always stayed true to his principles. There was no way he'd flipped sides in a matter of hours. And even if he had, he would never have called me out like that. He sent me away. He told me to get help. He wouldn't do that, and then announced to the entire planet that I was a fugitive.
That was his voice, though, I said. They might have told him they'd captured his family, threatened to torture them.
Gilof squirmed, and I saw several of the other Independence pilots looking at me in alarm. The idea that Unity might torture someone seemed too violent, too aggressive even for them. But given that Quillan had just tried to kill me, I wasn't feeling so charitable.
It's possible, Inine said. In that case, we need to rescue him.
She looked at Jorgen.
You saved us. Are you willing to help us with this as well?
Rinnakeen sent me to the humans to begin with, I told Inine. This alliance was his idea. This last operation hadn't gone as well as we would have liked, but we had more fighters now, and there was still hope.
We did come to help,
Jorgen said, and I could practically hear him sorting through his orders, trying to figure out what he was authorized to do.
It's obviously terrible that your leader is being used against your movement. But, Arturo said, we don't know that he's being threatened, do we? How do we know that he hasn't changed his mind?
Inine's eyes narrowed, but I spoke before she could. He hasn't. He wouldn't. Arturo and Jorgen exchanged a glance. These humans didn't know Rinnakeen at all. They didn't know me well enough to trust my judgment on this, and they knew the rest of my people even less. In their position, I doubt me too.
We need to think this through before we do anything, Arturo continued. Yeah,
Netter said.
Wouldn't want to defect on bad information or anything. We didn't defect,
Jorgen said.
We were ordered to go.
We were specifically not ordered to go,
FM said.
Remember? Cobb phrased it that way because he had to,
Jorgen said.
They were still orders, even if they were not orders. That means it wasn't defection, right?
He looked around at the others for confirmation, and they all stared at him.
Bless your stars, Kimmelin said.
Jorgen swore. The girl with the blue hair, Sentry, I'd guessed, based on the process of elimination, stepped up to me.
We haven't met, she said. I'm Sadie, and that's Ned.
Ned. At least that would be easy to remember. Sadie indicated the two men leaning against one of the ships.
And that's T-Stall and Catnip. Their real names are Trey and Corbin, but no one calls them that. They just go by their call signs.
I had no idea which one was T-Stall and which one was Catnip, and no one seemed to feel the need to correct this. This is my brother, Gilof, I said, and Rinnakeen's daughter, Inine. I didn't know the names of everyone else, and no one seemed to feel that this was the time to require the humans to remember them all. I turned to Gilof. I needed to convince the humans to mount an offensive against Unity from here, and that would be easier to do without the rest of my people standing here listening. We're going to need to map the facilities here, I said. Figure out what we're working with. Can you take the pilots and try to find somewhere safe for Rinnakeen's family and the others to rest? Gilof glanced at Inine's pregnant belly, and Inine glared at him. I didn't think she was the type who liked to be treated like a baby simply because she was carrying one.
I'm fine, Inine said. But it does seem wise to make sure we're safe here. Your captain is injured and will need some place to rest.
That was right. I stepped up to the exposed interior of the superiority ship. Several civilians sat inside, along with the Independence captain, who lay on the floor with a medic attending to a wound in his leg. Does he need further aid? I asked. I could hyperjump him to a hospital if it came to that, but if it wasn't necessary, I didn't want to risk it.
We can manage here,
the medic said,
though he'll need time before he can return to duty. All right,
Gilof said. He turned to Jorgen.
Thank you for coming to our aid. Though that thing you did, moving us from place to place, are you all Cytonics?
Jorgen looked alarmed, like he wasn't sure if he should give up their secrets. The humans had all left their slugs in their ships, and I didn't want to anger them, but knowing what assets we had on our side would only inspire my people. They have hyperdrives in their ships, I told Gilof.
Shake the branches,
Gilof said, and I heard more murmurs of shock and relief from the other pilots.
We look forward to our alliance.
He moved into the ship, helping the medic lift their captain, and together the group of pilots moved through the vestibule that led deeper into the platform. Inine and the other civilians followed them. I hoped the area wasn't too dangerous, and that any scavengers were long gone. But Gilof and the others had training. They could handle themselves and protect the others. I turned to Jorgen and the other humans. We'd come a long way, and I needed to convince them to stick with me a little longer.
What do we do now?
Jorgen asked.
We don't know if your friend Rinnakeen wants to be rescued. And these people, are they the only Urdale we can expect to be on our side?
Rinnakeen is on our side, I said.
Yes, Jorgen said. But he's speaking publicly against you, and he's only one person.
Lots of people would listen to Rinnakeen, which made him one very important person. But given what we just heard, that worked against us at the moment.
You're a fugitive,
Jorgen said.
And now we're fugitives for helping you.
We're not going to escape court-martial if we go home, Sadie said. Are we? Jorgen Matt, Kimmelin said. Is your mom really going to put you in prison for defection?
Maybe,
Jorgen said.
But it doesn't make me feel any better knowing they're willing to do that to the rest of you. Scud, what do we do?
You could call Cobb, FM said. See what he wants us to do.
Jorgen shook his head.
Cobb said he'd be in touch, but I can't call him. He's trying to maintain the illusion that he had nothing to do with our departure, so my parents don't shut him out of the loop entirely.
Can they do that? Kimmelin asked.
Maybe,
Jorgen said.
There's not a lot of specific codes on the books for how intergalactic diplomacy should be handled, which gives them some leeway.
Diplomacy is a mistake, I said. You're no better off there than you are here, not as long as your government is considering capitulation.
If both our governments are moving in the same direction, what are we going to do about it?
Jorgen asked.
We're pilots. We don't have control over things like that.
There are plenty of people on Redon who will do the right thing when they can see it clearly, I said. But they're being deceived. Unity talks like we can all get along, but we can't do that with people who want to oppress us. I looked around at the others, gauging their reactions. I was in a precarious position here. If they decided not to help me, the other pilots and I would be in it alone. The humans all looked at each other. They seemed resigned, which in this case was a good thing. I just needed to give them a reason to believe there was hope. Rescuing Rinnakeen will make a difference, I said. He's beloved by many of my people. If Unity is threatening him and we get him to safety, then he can speak the truth. Tell people what Unity is really up to. They've taken over the military, captured our people. If people hear that news from Rinnakeen's mouth, more of them would turn to our cause. Jorgen sighed.
Okay. We're committed. Let's make the best of it.
He looked up through the skylight at the giant auto turret, which had stopped firing. Through the negative realm, I could feel Quillan moving farther away.
What exactly is this platform doing here?
It was a battle platform, I said, abandoned after the Second War, centuries ago. I think it used to move through the miasma at will, but now it simply drifts.
We should take a look around,
Jorgen said.
The platforms on Detritus are similar, and they have all kinds of capabilities besides the auto fire. Maybe it will have a shield we could get working, or something else that might help us rescue Rinnakeen.
Jorgen turned to me.
Is there a reason you don't hyperjump in and pull him up here? Is it because you don't know where he is?
If he keeps broadcasting, it will be easy enough to triangulate his location, I said.
but some of the Unity Cytonics have the ability to inhibit, so they won't leave Rinnakeen unguarded. The superiority also granted Unity some Cytonic inhibitors, more than the one in this ship. I gestured toward the wreckage.
Is the inhibitor still on board?
FM asked. It was a good question. The ship's inhibitor had stayed active even after the cockpit was obliterated. It wasn't working now, but the technology should still be on board. I stepped into the empty hull, examining what was left of the ship. Rows of passenger seats were mostly still intact, and at the end of the aisle was a panel with instrumentation and a box set into the side of the ship. I moved up the aisle with FM right behind me.
That's a Tanix box,
FM said, and she squeezed past me and knelt down next to it. The other humans crowded around the hole in the hull, watching.
There isn't a slug in it,
Jorgen said.
We'd be able to feel it if there was.
He was right. The box felt empty to me. But when FM unlatched it and pulled it open, a pale blue Tanix with lime green spines stared up at us out of the box.
Hey, baby,
FM said, reaching in gently and pulling the slug out. She looked at Jorgen over her shoulder.
No slug in the box, huh?
I can't sense it in the negative realm, I said. I couldn't even touch the area where it rested in FM's arms, though the area had been too small for me to notice before. It's inhibited itself.
It's adorable,
Sadie said. FM ran a hand down its spines and it hummed quietly, as if nervous.
I guess that answers the question about how they do it,
Jorgen said.
And now we have one. Maybe we could figure out how to use it to inhibit the platform.
Can't you just ask it nicely? I asked.
We can try, FM said, but it might need a little more instruction. Working with the others took time.
Time, the slug trilled softly.
Still, Jorgen said, if we can harness the platform's capabilities, we could buy ourselves some. That would also give us some time to determine Rinnakeen's location.
FM continued to hold the new slug, and she didn't seem eager to let it go. Technically, this slug should belong to my people, because it was recovered on our turf. But I didn't know what to do with it, so for now, it was probably better off in her hands. I expect they'll be keeping Rinnakeen on or near the council tree. That's where the Unity Cytonics live.
More trees,
Ned said.
Do you really live on those? Not down on the surface of the planet?
Redon is a gas giant, I said. There is no surface, except the core. And the atmosphere down there isn't breathable. We only go down there for mining.
This is your home planet? Sadie asked. Like, your people lived in trees, even before you had starfighters?
Yes, I said. We've always made the trees of Redon our home. Sadie made a little squealing noise.
That is so cool.
And kind of terrifying, FM said.
What if you fall?
Do you often fall off your platforms? I asked.
No, FM said, but we don't really live on those. It's a military base. The civilians on Detritus all live underground. There are no children on Platform Prime.
We learn young how to be careful, I said. We don't walk on the edges of the branches without safety equipment. We have walls and railings and nets. A few people fall every year, but those deaths are mostly due to equipment failures, like having a cord break when rubber jumping. They all stared at me like I'd lost my mind.
All right, Jorgen said. Let's do some poking around and see what we can find on this platform.
I nodded. I wasn't sure what there would be to work with, but at least the humans weren't talking about fleeing anymore.
Alanik, Jorgen said, why don't you try the radio while we look around? See if you can find any more broadcasts that might give us a clue what the people who took Rinnakeen are planning.
The humans probably wanted to conference without me, but I couldn't stop them from talking to each other. Trying would make me look desperate. Okay, I said. FM carried the blue slug out of the ship, and the humans moved toward the doorway that led deeper into the platform.
I climbed out of the superiority ship and moved to Jorgen's cockpit to fiddle with the radio. There was a box bolted beneath his dash, similar to the one that had held the inhibitor slug. I popped the door open, and Boom Slug peered out at me expectantly, like I might provide more algae strips. He was about to be sorely disappointed. The humans hadn't been gone for more than a few minutes when someone approached the open canopy. Arturo walked toward me with his yellow and blue slug in a sling across his chest. He must have come back to retrieve it from his ship. I moved to stand, but Arturo held up a hand.
Alanik, he said, can we talk?
Yes, I said. Arturo looked over his shoulder, like he was afraid we'd be overheard. The slug in the sling regarded me quizzically.
I was thinking about what you said on Detritus, about the superiority wanting you to turn over the humans you were working with.
I hadn't said that to him, so I guessed Jorgen must have told him. We weren't working with any humans, I said.
Right,
Arturo said, his face grim.
But you are now.
Oh. I'd been so focused on getting help that I hadn't thought of how that would look. Clearly, I shouldn't have told Jorgen about that particular demand. We were just fighting the people who want to turn you over to the superiority together, I said.
Sure, Arturo said. But shooting at a few ships doesn't mean you aren't planning to betray us in some other way.
That was true, and nothing I could say would prove otherwise. So you believe I'm lying to you?
I don't know, Arturo said. I'm not sure what your motivations are. Jorgen believes you do want to make an alliance with Detritus, that you're going to teach him how to use his powers.
Use his powers? His Tanix added, as if for emphasis.
Easy, Naga,
Arturo said, petting its spines. I will, I said. I would be happy to, because we're working together. You all risked a lot to be here.
We did, Arturo said. So I hope you didn't come to Detritus looking for humans you could use to appease the superiority.
I bristled. I would never work with them. Their wood is rotted all the way through.
I want to believe you, Arturo said. So does Jorgen. That's why he didn't tell Cobb about what you said.
He should have, obviously. Their commander had made a decision without all the information. Jorgen suspects me of deceiving you, I said.
No, Arturo said. Jorgen is too busy worrying about whether he disobeyed orders. I'm worried you might have deceived us.
He looked me straight in the eyes. His were dark and deep, not clear and bright like most Erdale.
Can we trust you?
You already have. You did it when you left your planet with me. I'd fled when I'd first met them, not willing to offer them my trust, yet they'd come to help me anyway. I wouldn't have done the same, but I was glad that in this way they weren't like me.
We did, Arturo said. Because the potential benefits outweigh the risks. We need allies, same as you. And we may be clueless when it comes to galactic politics, but we're not helpless. If you turn on us, we will fight back. You understand?
Arturo presented the threat calmly and evenly, like it was nothing more than a fact. These humans possessed hyperdrives, had found the secret where I had failed. They'd also survived for nearly a century in the face of superiority hostility. It would be a very serious mistake to underestimate you, I said.
I'm glad we agree on that.
And I have no intention of betraying you or your people. Arturo kept watching me, his face thoughtful, evaluating me. It bothered me that I couldn't read in his eyes what it was that he saw.
Thank you. Arturo said. I hope we can keep this between us.
And then he turned and walked confidently back in the direction Jorgen and the others had gone. I watched until he was out of sight. I hadn't baited the humans here with the intention of trading them to the superiority, but I did want to use them, in a sense. Unity used the specter of human extinction to terrify my people into submission. If my people saw humans fighting on our side, they'd see that resistance was possible, even against terrifying odds. Their existence was a weapon I could use against my enemies. Given the circumstances, I would be foolish to do otherwise. Chapter 13. I could only wait in the ship for so long before I set off to find Jorgen and the others. It wasn't hard to find Jorgen, at least, because I could feel his mind and follow in that direction. The passageways here were smooth and sterile, similar to the ones on Detritus, though these were structured more like large tubes than square halls. Jorgen seemed to shift for a moment, and I wondered if he could sense me coming toward him. And then,
Alenik,
he said in my mind. Yes, I replied. You were able to establish contact.
It's similar to communicating with the slugs, but also different. It's easier when Spensa establishes the connection first.
Have you spoken with Spensa recently? I didn't know if she'd be able to communicate out of the negative realm the same way we communicated through it.
Yes, twice. Both times she kind of appeared, but she wasn't really there. Not like a hyperjump.
There was a kind of sadness that accompanied this, a wistfulness, maybe. You and Spensa are close, I said. Another emotion joined the sadness. Embarrassment, perhaps? Oh, I said. You and Spensa are a mate pair?
A what? No, not a mate pair. I mean, there's no mating involved.
I laughed, and Jorgen's voice disappeared from my mind. I thought he'd withdrawn intentionally, and if so, that was good. He was learning, even without my instruction. I'd found that was the best way with cytonic powers. They weren't learned directly so much as experienced and guided. Your mind knew what to do intuitively, if only you could get out of your own way and let it. I caught up to some of the humans outside a room filled with instrumentation panels. Jorgen and Kimmelin leaned in the doorway, watching FM as she pored over them. Did you find anything useful? I asked.
Maybe,
Jorgen said.
I don't suppose you happen to be an engineer?
No, only a pilot, I said. I approached and glanced at the buttons and switches FM was examining. Do any of you have expertise?
Rig does, FM said. He might be able to tell us if any of this would activate a shield or connect to a cytonic inhibitor.
Any of those would be useful, I said. FM looked over her shoulder at Jorgen.
As much as I'd love to ask Rig, I don't know that dragging him into this is a good idea. I wonder if we could get him out without anyone noticing,
Jorgen said.
If we had one of the slugs take us HOME,
The pin translated that last bit as a set of letters, but I had no idea what they spelled in the human's language. What does that mean? I asked. Jorgen sighed.
It's the word for the place where you live. FM accidentally made that the keyword for the slugs to take us back to Detritus.
It wasn't an accident, FM said.
It was a logical choice. And we're trying to get them to only do it if we say their names first as a command,
Jorgen continued.
But sometimes they mess up, and someone is like, I miss HOME, and their slug takes them to the engineering bay on Platform Prime, which is only an inconvenience if they were, say, in the mess hall or something.
Kimmelin sighed.
But it's a lot more annoying if you were about to climb into a cleansing pod, naked as the day you were born.
Not that she would know,
FM said.
Bless the stars of those startled engineers,
Kimmelin added.
So now we're reduced to spelling basic words,
Jorgen said,
when we could have picked something more unusual for the code word.
So you say the word, I said. And the slug hyperjumps with you? That's convenient.
When it works, it's awesome,
Jorgen said.
When it doesn't, it's annoying at best.
humiliating at worst.